to Section 13 of Article 5 of the Indiana Constitution. The Indiana General Assembly is convened for the purpose of hearing a message from the governor.
This is special coverage of Governor Mike Pence's state and the state address.
Guests, I have the high honor of introducing the 50th governor of the great state of Indiana, Mike Pence.
This is special coverage of Governor Mike Pence's State of the State address. This is Governor Pence's second address before the General Assembly, which allows him to review the state's accomplishments and challenges over the past 12 months.
Speaker Bosma, President Pro Tem Long, Lieutenant Governor Elsperman, Senator Lannan, Representative Pilath, distinguished members of the Indiana General Assembly, members of the judiciary, honored guests, my fellow Hoosiers, thank you for that warm welcome. After last week, warm is my favorite word. All kidding aside, I do want to take a moment to thank all of you in this chamber. I want to thank you and your families for the sacrifices that you make to be a part of the best state legislature in America. Thank you all. One year ago today, we started on a journey together. I've learned a great deal traveling all over our state over this past year, being with Hoosiers in good times and in bad, from hiking with kids in the Lincoln State Park to walking neighborhoods in Kokomo after the devastating tornadoes passed through that city. I've seen in those moments the character and spirit of our people firsthand, hardworking, resilient, people of faith, and generous to those in need. And from all that I've seen, I can say on this night with conviction that the state of our state is strong and growing stronger because Hoosiers are the best people on earth. We have good government because we serve a great people. And nowhere was that more obvious than during last week's Arctic storm. There was heartbreak, of course. But it would have been a lot worse were it not for the efforts of our first responders, who, without regard to their health and safety, rescued countless Hoosiers, our highway crews, our utility workers, churches and charities who opened their doors to shelter those in need. So to our local police, fire, EMS, to the Indiana State Police and highway workers at the local and the state level, and to every Hoosier who reached out to a neighbor in time of need, the people of this state are in your debt, and so am I. And allow me to offer special appreciation tonight to one group that came alongside Hoosiers during that Arctic storm, our citizen soldiers, who on short notice deployed in what were known as highway assistance teams. They worked with local first responders as well as our Indiana State Police. They rescued stranded motorists. They transported people to hospitals. They assisted local first responders in the midst of the storm. We're joined here tonight by several of those heroes who were part of those highway assistance teams. Sergeant First Class Maliki Dowdle from the 38th Infantry. Staff Sergeant Nick Lias of the 113th Operations Squadron. And Sergeant Mark Mueller of the 2nd 150th Field Artillery. Thank you for your service abroad and at home. Every Hoosier is proud of our Indiana National Guard. You know, I think moments like this should be about the future. But it's also important that we see how far we've come in the last year together. Now, last year, I told you at this podium that we would make job creation job one, that we'd live within our means, that we'd improve our schools, and that we'd cut taxes. And thanks to the hardworking people of this state and all of you in this room, we did just what we said we would do. We balanced our budgets. We created jobs. We cut red tape, we improved our schools and our roads, and we paid down state debt. Heck, I even put the state plane up for sale. I mean, if you know anybody that's looking for a good deal on a Beechcraft King Air, give me a call. We did all of that, and we came together to give Hoosiers the largest state tax cut in Indiana history. That's a record of accomplishment of which we can all be proud. The result? Indiana's become a national leader in job growth. Last year, Hoosiers created more than 47,500 new private sector jobs, and we maintained our AAA credit rating, one of the few states in the union to do that. And in November, one out of eight jobs created in the United States of America was created by businesses right here in Indiana. That is an extraordinary accomplishment for our people. Unemployment was 8.6% when I stood here last year. And while it's still too high today, at 7.3%, unemployment in Indiana now is at a five-year low. And since 2009, Indiana has the fifth fastest private sector job growth in the United States of America. Indiana's on the move because of the people of Indiana. And let me say most encouraging to this dad, Indiana's fourth and eighth graders recently showed the second best improvement in America in math and reading scores, and fourth grade reading proficiency is at an all-time high. That's an accomplishment we can all be proud of. So we've made progress in jobs and schools, but with still too many Hoosiers out of work, with our state lagging behind in per capita income and health, and too many kids in underperforming schools, I believe we must remain relentless, bold, and ambitious to keep our state moving forward. That's why last month I traveled throughout the state, from Fort Wayne to our old state capital in Corridor, and outlined my agenda for 2014. And in the time we have remaining, I want to share a few highlights with all of you tonight. First, we all recognize that low taxes are essential to attracting the kind of investment that will create good-paying jobs. And even with our recent progress, I believe that one significant impediment to business investment remains. It's called the business personal property tax. Now, this tax is especially damaging because it's harder for Hoosier businesses to grow because it ultimately directly taxes investments that they make in equipment. Now, let me say emphatically, taxing equipment and technology in a state that leads the nation in making and creating things just doesn't make sense. And it looks like our neighboring states have figured it out. Ohio and Illinois don't have a business personal property tax, and Michigan lawmakers just voted to phase theirs out. To make Indiana more competitive, I want to urge all the members of both chambers, let's work together to find a responsible way to phase out the business personal property tax. But one word of caution. As we work through this process, let's make sure we do it in a way that protects our local governments and doesn't shift the burden of this business tax onto the backs of hardworking Hoosiers. Now, I appreciate that both the House and the Senate leadership are looking at the business personal property tax and other ways to ensure that Indiana has the best tax climate possible. But phasing out the business personal property tax, I believe, will spur new investment by businesses large and small. Businesses like Coas Technology, an advanced manufacturing startup in Anderson, Indiana, launched by a Marine veteran whose products help support our troops. Or larger businesses like Amitrol in Jeffersonville, started back in 1964 by Don and Roberta Perkins to manufacture technical training systems and software for colleges and industry. Today, Amitrol employs 143 Hoosiers, and in 2010, it was named the Indiana Outstanding Business of the Year. These are just two of the kind of success stories we can see more of in Indiana with the right kind of tax reform. And since I mentioned both of them, why don't you join me in welcoming those two great Indiana business stories, Nate Richardson of Coas Technology and Paul Perkins of Amitrol, who are with us tonight in the People's House. Thanks for making Indiana the state that works. But we have to do more than just improve our tax code to get this economy moving again. Because roads mean jobs, we need to release $400 million for the next era of highway expansion and put Hoosiers back to work, keeping us as the crossroads of America. And because Indiana is agriculture, we need a permanent fix to the soil productivity factor. And because Indiana's regional cities are vital to our state's economic development, we need to encourage public and private investment to improve the quality of life in our cities. That's the Indiana way to a growing future, in the city and on the farm. And that way also means standing up to Washington, D.C. from time to time. Now, most Hoosiers didn't like Washington intruding on our health care long before it became a reality. Now more people than ever know why we were right to stand up to the federal government on the Affordable Care Act. There's been a lot of talk these days, though, about Medicaid. The sad truth is that traditional Medicaid is not just broke, it's broken. Research shows that the program actually doesn't lead to better health outcomes, and in some cases, believe it or not, it actually hurts the very people it's supposed to help. One analysis found two-thirds of children on Medicaid who needed to see a specialist actually couldn't in that program. Traditional Medicaid is not a system we need to expand. It's a system we need to change. And I believe the Healthy Indiana Plan is a great place to start. The Healthy Indiana Plan is a consumer-driven health care plan that moves people from emergency rooms to primary care and encourages low-income Hoosiers to take more ownership of their own health care decisions. But let me be clear on this point. We will continue to work in good faith with federal officials to expand access to the Healthy Indiana Plan in our state. But I will oppose any expansion of our health insurance system that condemns vulnerable Hoosiers to substandard health care or threatens the fiscal health of our state. Of course, the most important aspect for achieving Indiana's long-term success is all about our kids. It's about our schools. If we can't succeed in the classroom, we won't succeed in the marketplace. The great news is, to all those gathered here and my fellow Hoosiers looking on, Indiana schools are succeeding. This year, more than 500 public schools improved a full letter grade or more. With nearly 20,000 choice scholarships currently in use, Indiana has the fastest growing school choice program in the country. And with strong bipartisan support from both chambers last year, we're busy all over this state working to make career and vocational education a priority in every high school in Indiana again. We've made great progress in our schools. And working together, we've accomplished a lot. On career education, we're expanding curriculum in our high schools and developing new partnerships with local businesses to support regional career education. Now, while anyone who wants to go to college, regardless of where they start in life, ought to be encouraged to go, we all know there's a lot of good jobs in Indiana that don't require a college degree. These new partnerships through our regional works councils operating all over the state of Indiana will make sure that our schools work for all of our kids, regardless of where they start in life and regardless of where they want to start in life. To ensure we succeed in this effort, I'm proposing legislation that will conduct an in-depth assessment of how our career and technical education dollars are spent. And let's also make sure that adults who have a high school degree get the skills they need to get back on their feet by repurposing current job training dollars to help adult workers get the high-wage, high-demand jobs that are available in Indiana today. You know, Hoosiers have high expectations when it comes to our schools. That's why Indiana decided to take a time out on national education standards. When it comes to setting standards for our schools, let me be clear. Indiana's standards will be uncommonly high, and they will be written by Hoosiers, for Hoosiers, and be among the best in the nation. That progress that I just described earlier is a testament to our kids, to our parents, to our teachers, to our administrators, and it's a testament to the Indiana State Board of Education. Join me in thanking every member of the Indiana State Board of Education and Superintendent Glenda Ritz, who are here with us tonight. We appreciate your service for the people of Indiana. You know, I've always said there's nothing that ails education in Indiana that can't be fixed by giving parents more choices and teachers more freedom to teach. To continue to give parents more choices, I believe we can start in the area of early childhood development. Because every child deserves to start school ready to learn, I believe the time has come for a voluntary pre-K program to help Indiana's disadvantaged kids. Now, I'll always believe the best pre-K program is a prosperous family that's able to provide the kind of enrichment in the home that every child needs and deserves. But the reality is that's just not the case for too many Indiana children. Now, it's important that this program be voluntary. It's important that this program be available in the form of a voucher as well. I want parents to be able to choose to send their child to a church-based program, a private program, or a public pre-K program that they think would best meet their needs. But I urge all of you in this session of the General Assembly, let's come together. Let's work across party lines. On behalf of our children and their future, let's open the doors of opportunity to low-income families for quality pre-K education in Indiana this year. Another way to give parents more choices is to expand the availability of public charter schools. Even though they're charter schools, charters operate actually with several disadvantages. We need to level the playing field and allow charter schools to manage their budgets with the same flexibility as traditional public schools. At the same time, in the interest of greater choices for families, we should make sure that unused or underutilized public school buildings can be put to use by charters and other schools that need them. Now, choice matters, but at the end of the day, every Hoosier knows a good teacher makes all the difference. You know, we can all think of a teacher who changed our lives, someone who's on our mind right now, someone who saw more in us than we saw in ourselves. I think of Sister Rachel. I think of Mrs. Fisher and others who touched my life. But too often we don't invest enough in our teachers and allow them to lead as reformers. After all, they've dedicated their lives to education. And I believe we should do more to unleash their creativity and expertise. That's why I believe we need a teacher innovation fund to help teachers who are willing to try new ways to teach our kids. Innovative teachers like Steve Perkins, a Latin teacher from North Central High School in Indianapolis whose enthusiasm has ignited a passion for classical education in that school. And it got him named the 2014 Teacher of the Year. Mr. Perkins and his family are here with us tonight. With all the talk about parental choice, I believe teachers deserve more choices too. I think that any public school teacher who feels called to serve in a low-performing school should have some of their compensation protected if they're willing to make that move. Let's let our teachers follow their hearts and go where they think they can make the most difference. Now, on the subject of marriage, I know we're in the midst of a debate over whether Indiana should join some 30 other states that have enshrined the definition of marriage in our state constitution. Each of us has our own perspective on this matter. For my part, I believe in traditional marriage, and I've long held the view that the people, rather than unelected judges, should decide matters of such great consequence in our society. Now, reasonable people can differ, and there are good people on both sides of this debate. So let me say from my heart, no one on either side of this debate deserves to be disparaged or maligned because of who they are or what they believe. Let's have a debate worthy of our people with civility and respect. Let's protect the rights of Hoosier employers to hire who they want and provide them with the benefits that they deserve. And then let's resolve this issue this year, once and for all. And after that's over, let's come together to support every Hoosier family. One way we can do that is by helping working families with their family budget. Did you know that our tax deductions for dependents in Indiana have not increased since 1978, even though the cost of living has increased 3.6 times? I think it's time to index the personal and dependent exemptions to inflation to end this hidden tax on working families in Indiana. And let's also... let's also remember that families come together in many different ways, like the family of Karen Sauer. Karen's a single mom who felt called to become a parent by adoption. She adopted her two kids, Nevin and Dustin, when they were 11 and 12 years old after they'd spent many years in foster care. Karen says people are always telling her that she's changing those kids' lives. She's always quick to say, "They're changing mine." Would you join me in welcoming a great Indiana family to the People's House tonight? Karen and the kids, you're an inspiration to us all. Adoption is a beautiful way for families to come together forever, and we can better support families like Karen's by expanding and improving adoption in Indiana. We can improve the way we place children from state care into adoptive homes, and we can support every parent who's willing to lovingly adopt a child into their home. I think we should make it our aim to do nothing less than to make Indiana the most pro-adoption state in the United States of America. So, Indiana is strong and growing stronger every day, but we still have work to do. And we will only achieve our full potential by working together, like Hoosiers always do when it matters most. Like on a warm summer day last July, two boys were walking on the dunes along Lake Michigan. And suddenly, one of the boys just disappeared. 6-year-old Nathan Wasner simply vanished into the sand. His dad ran to the scene, marshaling help even while frantically digging for his son. Michigan City police and fire raced to the dunes and were joined by beachgoers who were using their bare hands and shovels to dig at the sand. Local businesses showed up, rushing machinery to help clear away the sand. Even reporters covering the story were seen using their own notepads to dig for the boy. For nearly 3 hours, not one of those Hoosiers gave up. 140 people, until a firefighter felt a hand beneath the sand and pulled little Nathan to safety. They called it the miracle on Mount Baldy. And when I called Nathan's dad at the hospital to see how he was, I told him they were calling it that. And Greg told me, "Governor, this wasn't our miracle. This was everyone's miracle." And he was right. And that's the Indiana way. We are a strong and good people, but we are never stronger than when we work together. So let me say as I close, as I said a year ago at this very podium, together we will build a more prosperous future. Together we will open doors of educational opportunity for all of our kids, and together, and only together, we will approach our third century with confidence, with faith in Him who has ever guided this 19th star, and with boundless faith in all who go by the name Hoosier. I know the best is yet to come. Thank you. God bless you, and God bless the great state of Indiana.
You've been listening to special coverage of Governor Mike Pence's State of the State Address. Governor Pence will appear on Indiana Lawmakers this week to further discuss his legislative agenda. Visit WFYI.org for more details. Tomorrow afternoon at 2, we'll have the 2014 State of the Judiciary Address broadcast live here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. We'll have a recap and analysis of the State of the State Address with No Limits host John Krall and Mary Beth Schneider, former political reporter for the Indianapolis Star, next. It's made possible on 90.1 by your membership and by Apparatus, supporting Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Central Indiana during National Mentoring Month in January. More on how to become a Big Brother, Big Sister, or be a part of a big couple at BeBigForKids.org. And by Storytelling Arts of Indiana, presenting Native American storyteller and author Tim Tingle, Saturday evening, January 18th at 7:30 at the Indiana History Center. More at StorytellingArts.org. And by Milestone Advisors, offering financial services to help business owners get the financing they need to keep their companies growing, dedicated to helping business owners grow smart. More at MilestoneAdvisors.net.
Welcome to this special edition of No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. I'm joined this evening by my colleague, the former political reporter for, I'm dating both of us, for more than 20 years, Mary Beth Schneider. Mary Beth, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Well, the governor just finished speaking. It was his second State of the State. He spoke for almost exactly 27 minutes and was interrupted for applause somewhere between 25 and 30 times. Some of the applause was muted at points, so I couldn't tell exactly whether to mark it with a full A or not. What were your first impressions of the speech?
That if anybody was surprised by a single thing the governor said, then they haven't been paying attention, not only the last year, but during the campaign. There's nothing new here. Instead, he's sort of trying to sell what he's already laid out there, elimination of the business personal property tax in particular, and make people feel that this state is moving ahead without having some big splashy new idea that draws attention.
What was the news in it, do you think?
Probably the thing that most people were watching for is what would this very pro-life governor say and very conservative governor say about the same-sex marriage amendment. By the way, he did not mention abortion at all, which was a hot-button issue in this state last year. Same-sex marriage, it took until the sixth page of the speech, about 20 minutes in, and he doesn't mention same-sex marriage, he just mentions definition of marriage. And I think that this is actually will make the people who want to see that amendment go in the Constitution happy, even though he doesn't say very much about it, because he says no delay. No delay means you don't rewrite anything that's already there. Otherwise, that starts the legislative clock again. No delay means you get it on the ballot this year. And he also said, let the people decide, not judges.
Well, is there, yeah, there was some of the code language, but I also read it a little bit as if he were saying, you know, this is it. We're going to fight it out this year, but then we are done one way
absolutely,
or the other.
Absolutely, we are done. Yeah.
What was the other thing I think people were targeting, and we probably ought to talk about the business property, personal property tax here in a minute or so, was the now somewhat tampered down civil war between the state superintendent of public instruction, Glenda Ritz, and the gubernatorial, Republican-appointed, State Board of Education. What did he say there?
Well, actually, that was the funniest part of the speech, because they have been verbally brawling this entire year. And so he mentions them together in one sentence and asks everybody to thank them. You know, thank them for what? For not, you know, fist fighting there during the speech?
Entering a new definition of dysfunction?
Yeah. You know, that there was a very small part, but I got a kick out of that.
What other, you know, in terms of it's an odd speech. I mean, my reaction, I try actually not to advance opinions in this forum, but given that we're supposed to analyze here, I've got to say, if I were writing a news story on this, I'd struggle with the lead. Where would you go with that?
I think you could go one of two ways. Probably same-sex marriage, because that is the topic that most people are talking about. But the other lead would be that he punted on business personal property tax. Before, I think he was saying eliminate. This has phase it out, which is what the legislature wants to do. So he's gone in their direction there. But he doesn't give them any help in saying how to do that, because he says he wants to do it in a way that protects our local government and doesn't shift the burden to the backs of other Hoosiers. Well, how then? How do you eliminate that? And if you're going to have replaced that tax money, it's got to come from somewhere, so that's a shift. Or if you don't replace it, then that hurts local government. And so, yes, we don't want to hurt government. We don't want to burden people. But how do you do this? And he doesn't give anybody any guidance.
What did it tell you? He spent an awful lot of time stroking the legislature. I mean, he deviated from his text at times, referred to them at one point as the best state legislature in the country. That's not language you could ever imagine Mitch Daniels saying or anything.
But, you know, maybe that is more Mike Pence's style. I mean, after he was a man of Congress, he is more of a, perhaps sympathetic to some of the problems that legislatures face. And I think he has, in, you know, to his credit, tried to come in and tried to work with them. But giving people compliments is not as helpful as it is laying out a specific plan of how do you get this business personal property tax phased out with, given his ground rules.
We're going to be talking in a few minutes with several legislators who are going to join us for this post-state of the state analysis. But how do you think, having covered the Indiana General Assembly since the early 1990s, right? How do you think legislators are going to respond to this speech?
Well,
because clearly they were at least the initial audience that he was trying to reach.
You know, I mean, legislators are fairly knee-jerk in a lot of this stuff. Democrats won't like it. Republicans will love it. But Republicans had a lot in here to love. And he's calling for a lot of the things that they ran on. Preschool with vouchers, doing more to expand and support charter schools, cutting taxes. From the Democrats, they are not at all going to like the part about non-expansion of Medicaid. Indiana is one of the states that's turned its back on millions and millions and millions of dollars from the federal government to give health care for low-income Hoosiers. And the governor said, well, there are some people who are left behind by Medicaid. They don't get as good or broad health care as you would want. But then what do you tell somebody who has no health care at all? And that will be what the Democrats will be pointing to. I think they'll be all over.
And that's a significant number, because there are, what, yeah, 250,000 to 300,000 of those folks in the state,
yeah,
who are left outside the parameters of the Healthy Indiana Plan and other programs. Did it surprise you that he did not refer to that gap at all?
No. Were you surprised? I wasn't. I mean, this has been his position all along. He was in Congress and fought against Obamacare. He is not going to, as governor, come and say, oh, you know, we need to adopt this, or let me tell you all the numbers that are going to get left behind by not going to this. The trouble with going back to the Healthy Indiana Plan, and this will be what the Democrats talk about, is that it cannot, under its current form anyway, serve as many people as you could under Medicaid.
You mentioned a moment ago that that there were references to pre-K, mm-hmm, but including a voucher program.
Democrats will like that.
That's where I was going with this, is mm-hmm, that there is a little bit of a wedge there, in that it is giving them the pre-K, but it's forcing them to take a pill they won't like with it.
You know, Democrats in the state are fairly conservative. I'm curious to hear what they say about that, because there are so many areas that don't have pre-K programs except ones that are run either by a private group or a church. Church is a big preschool provider. So I don't know. They'll say, look, we'll take what we can get here because we think the preschool education is so important.
moment that I was looking at that I found was when he was talking about same-sex marriage, because that's been such a hot topic. You know, the House Judiciary Committee had a really volatile meeting yesterday where they adjourned without taking a vote. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation about whether the proponents for the amendment have the votes to get it out.
Well, if they'd had the votes to get it out, you would have think they would have called for the roll call.
So I guess what I'm saying is when he got to that section, the applause that came, A, was somewhat delayed, and B, was fairly muted at the end. Does that speak to the kind of uneasiness there is in the legislature about this whole issue?
I think both legislators in both parties, this is not a Republican versus Democrat issue so much as it has been in the past. And there's a lot of conservative Democrats who have voted for this in the past, who have painted themselves now into a corner because the good political stand perhaps in 2000 and 2004 and 2008 may not be the best one in 2018 and 20 and 21. Attitudes are changing. They haven't really changed yet, though, and that is why I think that you will see they will. If you're for this, you want this done this year. You don't want to wait because you may not get it.
And you don't want to go through it again, too.
Yeah.
We are joined now on this special edition of No Limits, where we're analyzing the state of the state, by Indiana Senator Jim Merritt, a Republican from Indianapolis. Senator Merritt, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hey, Senator. It's
good to have you. I'm joined by Mary Beth Schneider. I think you know her.
Of course.
Yeah, just for 20 years or so.
Yeah.
So what did you think of the speech?
I thought it was very well done. And I always think of State of the State as the opportunity for the governor. I was elected in 1990, so we've had several under my watch. And for the governor to speak to the legislature, but also speak to the state of Indiana. And Governor Pence has been publicly speaking and competitive speaking since, I think, 7 years old or something like that. He's an outstanding public speaker. And I really believe that leaders show certainty, leaders show vision, and they're also – they can – turn a word, and he did very, very well tonight.
What was the most important part of the speech? What were the places that you were keying in on?
Well, I got on the phone a little early, and you were talking a little bit about the same-sex marriage situation or referendum amendment to the Constitution, and I really believe that he handled that correctly. He stated his opinion, and then he obviously wanted to make it very clear that there are good people on both sides, and I thought that was well said, well stated, and I really believe that he has that in his heart. And I'm glad, when I was asked earlier by another news outlet if I thought he would talk about it, and I was a little unsure because the priorities for the state of Indiana, that is not one of them, and he just had a small mention of it, and really stayed to, you know, the school issue and the financial end of it with the personal property tax and issues that people send us to the State House to work on this year.
And I've got to say, Senator, in reading that, yeah, Mary Beth, please feel free to jump in as well with a question. But in reading that, you know, if I were a proponent for that measure, and I'd assume the governor was on my side, I don't think he landed quite as hard as they would have expected on something like that. Does that reflect some of the ambivalence that's in the legislature about this issue right now?
Well, I think that the governor, campaigned on issues that weren't of social nature, if you will, and that's how he ran for governor. And he remarked to me once that he is governor of all the people, and I think that's what you're seeing from him. It's growth, and it's not what you expected probably from his congressional career. And he's a leader for the complete state, all 6 million plus. And I think that's what you saw tonight. And I can't read his mind, but I think that's how he wanted to approach it. and not for what is going on right now, but that's how he wants to lead for all the people.
Senator,
and he stated his opinion, and he wasn't emphatic about it, but he did state his opinion.
Do you think the tone that the governor set in that portion of the speech will carry over to the legislature, or do you think it will still be a pretty divisive debate there?
Well, to the legislature, I believe it will. Mary Beth, I don't know if you're in the building much these days, but you've retired from the Star, so
right.
But there are people that have come into the building that are very vocal and emotional about the issue.
Yes.
And I think most legislators, all 150, want to be fair, want to listen to everyone, and make the decision. And I think everybody is obviously trying to be as fair as possible and be open. And so I would imagine that most legislators sitting in that chamber tonight were appreciative that he was explicit in his opinion, but also very soft in his delivery of let's not throw stones.
I had one other question. Did he didn't lay out any more roadmap or explanation for the legislators of how you phase out the business personal property tax without burdening local government or other taxpayers. Is that happening behind the scenes? Is he being more specific?
Well, he not yet. And I believe that he's probably waiting for we announced what we thought was a good plan, and the House has announced what they view as being a good plan, and he's probably taking his time to analyze what can be done for the combination of it, and I think he's grown, and I think he knows that he needs to work with the legislature. He is obviously a former legislator, and I think the now since we get the State of the State out speech out of the way, if you will, I think the real work starts now.
Senator, thank you very much for joining us. And we know you've got other places to be, but we have...
John, one question. Hey, Mary Beth, how's your dad?
My mom and dad are doing just great. Thank you for asking for people who don't know. That's why I left the paper, was to care for them. They're doing great.
Yes. Good.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much, John.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
And we are joined now by Representative Christina Hale and Representative Craig Battles, both Democrats. I'll ask both of you. I'm here with Mary Beth Schneider. What were your impressions of the speech?
Christina, what?
Christina?
They're speechless.
They're speechless. We will try to resolve that. What of significance did you find in regard to what Jim was saying, Senator Merritt, I should say? Those of us who have been around the legislature, we often operate on a first-name basis.
I think he did focus in more on the tone than perhaps you and I had been talking about. We, you know, reporters sort of hone in on certain specific policy things. But it really was, I did think, vintage Mike Pence tone. A lot of people who perhaps only saw him on a few clips from Congress wouldn't know that I think in most of his speeches and his attitudes, he's always tried to maintain a pretty civil discourse. And it goes back to one of his first campaigns for Congress where he didn't and apologized for it and said he wasn't going to be that
way
again.
When he did the infamous, Arab commercial.
Having said that, as a reporter, I also thought it seemed like padded with a lot of feel-good stories. And maybe that's because it's a short session of the legislature. How many big, bold, proposals can you possibly lay out anyway?
Well, there was an awful lot. Before we went on the air, you and I were talking about the fact that there were a lot of the Reagan-esque moments where you point to somebody up in the gallery and say, this is an example of, someone who is a great Hoosier or a great American or whatever, and I'm going to milk an applause line out of
yes.
their success.
And if there's a governor in the nation that doesn't say that their people are the greatest people in the nation and their children the smartest, I'll eat my hat.
It's like Garrison Keillor saying, where all the children are above average. So I think we are joined now by Representative Christina Hale. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. So I'm here with Mary Beth Schneider, and we're trying to decipher the state of the state, see what was important. What were the most important pieces in the speech that you saw?
I think there were several things. One was the reference that the governor seemed to be very firm in his opinion that we need to move away from the Common Core standards. I think that was the most clearly articulated statement he's made on that topic, and I know people have been looking for him to come out one way or another on that. I thought that it was interesting when he talked about his proposed tax shift that he said, of course, we can't burden local governments or homeowners, taxpayers. However, he really didn't identify another source where that money, that, you know, the billions of dollars would come from. So finally, his comment regarding his stance on marriage, he seems to have avoided making any kind of comment on that to date, but in a soft way, he made his position clear. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, he did seem, you know, he came out strong from the gate talking about jobs, and the economy, but he didn't really reference the business case regarding the marriage amendment in his comments.
And we are also joined by Representative Craig Battles, also a Democrat. Representative Battles, welcome to the program. What were your thoughts on the speech?
There are areas that I think we can work with the governor on, and certainly areas that are going to be more difficult. Whether I agree with the purpose or not, I think he's probably a pretty good man. He seems to be. The pre-K kindergarten is a place, I think, without question, that we can work on. And for the audience, I am an educator, and I know firsthand just the importance of those kids coming in with skills and the skills as they enter kindergarten, which really has a major, major impact. Honestly, studies will show on the success or failure the remainder of their academic career. I think that's an area that we can work on, need to work on as a state. And although it's a pilot, it's an area that we will need to expand. But clearly, I think one area, and I agree with Christina, that we're going to have difficulty, and that is with personal property tax. I don't think anybody's against the tax per se, but it has over a $1 billion impact any way you cut it. That $1 billion, and quite frankly, I'm getting tired of the legislature playing hero and goat, where we make cuts that we have no skin in the game. The state receives not a penny of revenue for the personal property tax. It goes to local government, and it's sure easy for us to make cuts that we have no skin in the game. To this date, I've heard no revenue replacement, and frankly, the only revenue replacements that I heard are going to end up being some kind of local option income tax or a shift in tax rates. Which means it may be a discount for businesses, but it means that homeowners, rural agricultural businesses, small business owners, renters are going to end up picking up the bill. And so it sure appears to me that unless we can come up with some pretty clear details where the state is not only replacing those dollars, but replacing them in a meaningful way with potential growth, that clearly is an area I think that's going to be an uphill battle.
What did the two of you think about the section of the speech where he's making reference to the State Board of Education and State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Glenda Ritz?
Go ahead, Christina.
no one wants to touch that one.
I'm going to defer to the educator on that one. I think that he is doing his best to make amends and to reach out a hand of collaboration. However, at the same time, for all practical matters, there still are some real structural issues and disagreements between, you know, those two entities. I noted that he did not really mention his new state agency that is the umbrella organization over the different education initiatives. One area that he did reference regarding the regional works councils and the career council, I wish he would have emphasized a little more, because I think that is a place where people from across the aisle really are together, side by side, making some headway for Hoosiers, ensuring that we have better opportunities regionally, partnering with private enterprise and community colleges and high schools to help put young people to work in rewarding careers. That's something that's really working, and we're at the beginning stages, but there's some momentum there, and we're already seeing good results.
Were you surprised that he brought up no Medicaid expansion at all, given that that has been his position all along and nobody was expecting him to change it? And what do you guys think is going to happen there, and what is the Democrat statement on that?
I can speak that I wasn't surprised by the comment. It's very consistent with what he has done. I guess my surprise has been always for a person of states' rights that's been anti-federalist to turn the Affordable Care Act administration over to the feds, where literally the state has absolutely no input whatsoever, and we're at the mercy of the federal government. I'm surprised that, frankly, that he hasn't advocated and we aren't advocating more of a hybrid system. I also do worry about we take the HIP program that's been, I think, Republican, Democrat, and like will tell you, has been a very successful program that's reached a lot of Hoosiers. But by not using the Medicaid expansion and using HIP, we're going to put a lot of those folks that were currently on the HIP program in jeopardy, and now we're going to be without insurance. They're kind of in a donut hole, if you will, financially, that they make just too much, but they don't make enough. And so clearly that's an area that I don't think it was any shock or surprise, but I think we need to keep an open mind if we're really about making sure that Hoosiers, all Hoosiers, have affordable health care. There's got to be a happy medium. There's got to be a compromise in here between the HIP and the Medicaid expansion where we don't get ideological and end up hurting Hoosiers in the process.
Was there anything in the speech at all that you, either of you, think changes the debate in the legislature?
I'll jump in and say no, I don't think there was. I think there were a lot of missing things in the speech. You know, he described Indiana as being very strong and getting stronger. I think that might be a little bit of hyperbole. I wouldn't say we're good to great either. We have some challenges. You know, more than one in five of school-age girls is living below the poverty line. More than 350,000 Hoosier students suffer from food insecurity. One in six Hoosier girls have been raped or sexually assaulted. We have some very serious problems. You know, and I suggest the government's first job is to provide for public safety. And here we know the children of Indiana truly are not safe from sexual violence. We need to be talking about some of those difficult topics as well. You know, Indiana has to be a destination where businesses, of course, want to locate, thrive, and contribute to our tax base. That's not going to happen if we continue to decline. And we have a lot of work to do.
I think that will have to be the last word. Representative Battles, Representative Hale, thank you very much for joining us at what I know has to be a very busy time for you.
Thank you very much.
Certainly.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, I think we've got time for a couple of closing thoughts here, Mary Beth. Is this speech going to be something people are even going to remember a year from now? I mean, the thing is, Governor kept saying, as I said a year ago, and his close was pretty much an exact repeat of the way he closed last year.
If he had said the world will little note nor long remember, he would have been right. But, you know, that's true of, I think, every State of the State speech I've covered.
You have been listening to a special edition of No Limits, where we've been analyzing the State of the State. I am John Kroll. I've been joined by Mary Beth Schneider. Thank you for joining us.
Bengali devotional hymn from India by the duo Rasa. Just one of the unusual artists you'll hear every week on Hearts of Space. I'm Stephen Hill. Join me for an